Say Your Piece was created with women in mind. Women are often unheard or spoken over, but not here. Here, women speak authentically and spiritually about their life experiences, no matter the subject. The pun is intentional. By saying their piece, they find their peace. Thanks so much for being here. My name is Ali Krasner. Let's dive in. So hello and welcome to this episode of Say Your Piece. I'm Ali Krasner and I'm here today with Shauna. How are you today, Shauna?
I'm doing well. Hello, hello. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for being here. And could you tell our listeners where you're calling in from today?
Yeah, so my name's Shauna Wicker. I'm calling from Minnesota. So the Twin Cities, St. Paul, Minneapolis, Minnesota. I live here with my husband and my son.
Awesome. And are you a Minnesota native? You don't have the accent.
Yeah, I'm from Wisconsin. So I'm from Milwaukee originally, but I've lived in Minnesota my whole adult life. I mean, since I was 18. So married a Minnesotan, pretty accustomed to Minnesota life now. I'm kind of a hybrid.
Okay, I love that. So you're pretty well integrated. Good.
Yeah.
Well, Shauna, you're here to talk to us a little bit about your story, your health journey. So let's rewind a little bit in time. And it was a couple of years back that everything started. Is that right?
Yeah. So I got married in 2015 and we really kind of wanted to, we didn't date very long, right? So we were very, very fast getting started, which is an important part of the story.
Okay.
Because my husband kind of wanted to have kids right away. He was like, why not? Like, why would we wait? Right. And to me, we'd only dated 6 months and got engaged, and our engagement was only probably 10 months or so.
Okay.
So it was very, very fast. And I wanted to kind of wait. I was a lot more hesitant, a lot more like nervous. Just a lot more hesitant. I really wanted to like wait to start having kids. Cause in my mind, you know, you start trying and it's just boom, boom, boom. And all of a sudden you have a bunch of babies everywhere. Like that's kind of like my impression of like how this works.
Sure.
That's kind of what I had in my head. So I was like, I'm not ready for that. You know, I'm just barely on board. Like I'm just starting to get used to this idea of being married.
Yeah.
So I really wanted to wait. So our compromise was to wait a year before we started trying to have kids, before we started trying to get pregnant. And, we use NFP, natural family planning. I won't get into too much detail, but basically it's like, you know, no contraceptive. So we never used any kind of pills or shots or anything that like manipulated my hormones, manipulated my body. It was all, it's all like natural. So part of what that is basically tracking like symptoms. Mm-hmm. So I track my own symptoms and signs throughout the month, throughout the entire cycle, every single day. And so then we have an idea of like when I'm fertile, when I'm not, right? So I know exactly like when I'm ovulating, what days we can kind of avoid if we're avoiding pregnancy. And then vice versa, when you're trying, right? Which days are really like, all right, these are our days, you know? And so that's what we were using.
Okay.
And so it was really easy to kind of get into the flow of that when we're avoiding pregnancy. Like, okay, we're just avoiding. This is what we're going to do. And we did that. We did that for a year. It was great. It was so good. I mean, so good for our marriage. Talk about like communication skills. It's really, really helpful.
That you have to be like quite frank about what's going on with you in your body when you use that type of method. Yeah.
Yeah, no, yeah, absolutely. It's very much like teamwork. Like we're doing it together, you know, rather than it being all like on me.
On
like,
you.
Oh, yeah. I need to remember to take my pill or whatever. Like instead, it's very much like we're both in this together. My husband would actually even like do the charting. Like he would write it down and like ask what my signs were, you know? So it feels very much like teamwork, which is just so good for, you know, the beginning of a marriage when you're first starting off. Hugely, hugely helpful. And so we did that. We did that for a year. And after that, I was kind of like, okay, we're going to be open. Right. In my mind, I'm like, we're open now.
Like to start trying, you mean, sort of?
Right, exactly. To try to get pregnant. And with the system that we use, it's called Create and Model. We're like NAPRO technology kind of model NFP. There are only two ways. It's either you're avoiding pregnancy or you're trying, right?
That's like, true. That's true.
Yeah, you can imagine why, right? So it's one or the other. But that was very scary to me also to say like, we're trying, because that felt very intentional, right? Like we have a purpose.
Yeah,
so I'm
yeah.
like, we're open. And after about 6 months or so, 5-6 months of that and still not being pregnant, I started, I just mentioned it to my doctor. kind of just brought it up, like, hey,
by the way.
Yeah. And the way that works with infertility, your standard kind of normal MD kind of doctor that you would see, a normal OB or primary care, they're going to tell you it's going to need about a year to 2 years, sometimes 2 years, of trying to get pregnant without getting pregnant before they'll actually call it infertility and start testing and treating you for infertility. So that's pretty standard that they would actually like turn you around. However, because we were practicing as NFP and we've been charting, and our doctor wasn't like an NFP doctor, you know, she knows that, right? So in that world, it's really 6 months. They're like, okay, if you've been trying, if you know your body, you know when you're ovulating, you know this stuff, and you've been trying for 6 months, we can start taking actions. We can start looking into things. That's when we start investigating infertility already at 6 months.
Okay. And so then did you start like at that moment then? Yeah.
Yeah. So basically I mentioned to my doctor and she kind of got the ball rolling looking into things. And at first it's like, it's kind of silly things that I would have never thought, right? They have me on like special diets.
Okay.
I had to give up all gluten and dairy. You know, we got blackout curtains because your sleep patterns and being interrupted in your sleep can affect your fertility and all these kinds of things. So sleep, diet, exercise, this kind of stuff, was really big. And then they started testing me for, you know, your kind of run of the mill standard, more easy fix kind of things, right? So do you have a bacterial infection? We're going to give you a pap smear. Do you have PCOS, right? Cysts on your ovaries. Polycystic ovarian syndrome is a very, very, very common cause of infertility among women, especially young women. And so that's like an ultrasound. So we did an internal ultrasound. We're doing all these kinds of tests and it's negative, negative, negative. So at the end of the day, after months of doing these kinds of things, we don't know what's wrong with you. Okay. And eventually I started seeing different doctors. I got all kinds of tests done. They did hormone panels. Hormone panels is when they do blood draws.
Okay.
And you have to go in every other day, every 2 days and get your blood drawn so that they can actually measure your different hormone levels throughout your cycle.
Wow.
And kind of compare them to where they're supposed to be. So we did that. Saw that I had low progesterone, but really didn't know why. Yeah, your progesterone's kind of low. Okay, we can get you on progesterone therapy. So long story short, I'm seeing multiple different doctors.
Yeah.
And we still have no answers.
And what about your husband? Do they do any like fertility tests on him as well? Or?
Good question. Yeah. In the beginning, not as much. In the beginning, it was really all of these kind of more common, right? More common things that we test for.
Yeah.
After a year or so of seeing these different doctors, we did move. And in our new doctor, that was the first thing we did was had my husband was tested as well.
Okay.
Kind of weird. Like, fertility testing for men is super weird and really awkward. Fun fact though.
What does that involve? I'm curious.
Yeah. So they usually test, I mean, it's sperm sampling. So they need a sample. They need a sample of sperm and they can test for how healthy they are. How many are there, right? Like the count, like your actual sperm count. So we know how many is like average or good for how many sperm is in a certain amount, right? How many little guys are swimming around in there and you want it to be really high. So they need to test it. We learned, had no idea, there is actually a way to do this sperm testing while having intercourse, through having intercourse with your wife, which is pretty amazing. had no idea that was possible, but was good. Super weird, super awkward, but less awkward and less weird than the standard way of going into a doctor's office. So we got to learn all kinds of fun things like that. And so we did go through that. So yeah, that was part of it. But it was pretty clear with my low progesterone and with my charting that something was going on with me.
That it was with you.
Yeah. Yeah. It was pretty clear. Like I said, because I knew my chart and because I had these symptoms tracked all throughout the month, I could go to my practitioner, my NFP practitioner, who's the person who just like teaches you how to chart, right? And she says like, yeah, this is looking weird. You need to see a doctor. This is like beyond my scope. You should talk to your doctor. So we knew that from the beginning that like something was going on. So it would be pretty bad luck if something was also going on with my husband.
Okay, like, I see what you mean. Yeah.
Yeah. So we were kind of doing that thing. And eventually we get to Illinois. So we moved to Illinois and amazingly there's this doctor who specializes in NAPRO technology, which is the system that we use, right, for NFP. And I see that she's 45 minutes away. I'm like, you know what? I'm going to do it. I think it's worth it. You know, she might know And at this point, I'm feeling like pretty discouraged, like pretty down. Like really the emotional difficulties of infertility are really starting to get me at this point.
Yeah,
this
because has been, it had been like a year.
Yeah, point, about a year and a half.
Yeah. Oh, a year and a half.
Yeah, wow. Probably. Yeah. And so it's been going on for a while. And we've been, like I said, doing all the testing. I'd seen three or four different doctors at that point and still had like no answers, right? And so she was kind of like, not a last hope, but a little bit, you know?
Yeah, kind of like a last ditch effort in a way. Yeah,
sure. Yeah, like I'm really, really hoping, right, that she'll have some answers. Yeah. And so I go see her. She was fantastic. So just amazing person in general, amazing bedside manner and all that. And I see her the first time and I take out my chart. You know, it's what she wants to see. And she took one look, seriously, one look at my chart, Allie, and said, that looks like endometriosis. And it just... Wow. It just like floored me because I had never heard that word before. Like maybe I had heard it at some point, like heard of it, but no doctor, none of these four other doctors that I'd been seeing talking about infertility even mentioned endometriosis as a possibility. I didn't even really know what it was. And I'm just like, oh, right. And so it's this weird emotional response, right? Where it's like, there's almost relief and you're kind of happy. Like, oh my gosh. There's an answer. There's another avenue, right? Somebody, she might know, like, and I trust her, right? So it's kind of relief to think like this could be it. And yet at the same time, like, this is some disease that I'm like, you know, like, oh shoot. So it's this weird kind of juxtaposition of like happy and relief, but also like scared and nervous. And like, yeah, this is bad news. Like I have some weird disease, right? So pretty strange experience, but she was really confident and she had specialized in this. She had seen many, many women with endometriosis all the way through their treatment, had done their surgeries, the whole nine yards. So she was super experienced in this. And so I thought, okay, like I'm going to trust this lady and we'll pursue. And that's when I really got to learn kind of what is endometriosis? What does this even mean? And how was this the first time that I'd heard about it?
Yeah, because I feel like it's starting to sort of be more talked about out in the open, but probably a lot of women have the same reaction and they think, you know, I've heard a little bit about this, but I'm not sure exactly what it is. So for those people who don't know exactly what it is, could you sort of explain it to us in layman's terms, I guess?
Yeah, I definitely can. And if you look into it, it's actually very, very common and extremely underdiagnosed, basically. But what it is, what happens when you have endometriosis, so normal women, right? You've got your uterine lining. So the tissue that lines your uterus that normally gets thicker and thicker throughout the month. And then every month sheds, right? Sheds and bleeds and you kind of start all over and that's your cycle. With endometriosis, that tissue, it literally just kind of goes rogue and just goes wherever it wants and like other parts of your body. And so it will literally find itself in other places and start attaching itself to other internal organs. Yeah. So it is just as weird and creepy as it sounds. That's exactly.
But is that very painful or do you not really notice
so
it?
So that's a really good question. It depends. Is the short answer. So it depends on where the tissue goes and what it attaches to and how it attaches and how long it's there. And this goes back to my story and why I was not diagnosed for so long was because generally the number one symptom is very painful periods, right? You have very painful periods. That's the number one symptom of endometriosis because not only does this tissue go rogue and like attach other places, but it still sheds and bleeds every month as if it is in your uterus. So it's super bizarre. And so usually that's very painful. Okay. For me, I had no pain. I had very, very light periods, super easy, like very light PMS, like nothing. I never even took really ibuprofen or Midol, like maybe one time a month.
Oh, wow.
Okay. So super light cramping. Like my periods have always been very easy and very light. And so as you can imagine, when people look at the list of like, okay, these are endometriosis symptoms, she doesn't have them, moving on. So they never even brought it up. It was never even like considered by these other doctors because I didn't have the quote unquote typical symptoms.
Yeah.
And so I think that happens a lot, which is really unfortunate. Yeah. So for me, I didn't have the painful periods. That's a really common symptom. Other common symptoms are like really heavy periods. Like if they're very, very, very heavy, you're going through multiple heavy tampons a day kind of thing. Or, you know, you need to change a pad every hour, something like that for multiple days. Or the other common symptom would be really, really, really light. Like I have a friend who uses like toilet paper half the time. Like she's just like kind of uses a little bit of toilet paper and it's fine. Or like a thin one of those thin like panty liners. And she never needs anything more than that. And I've told her, I mean, she knows, like, she's a good friend of mine. And I've told her multiple times she needs to go in and get checked out for endometriosis. Cause like, that's not normal. Mm. That's not normal that it'd be that light.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's the other common symptoms, but those are generally the big ones they talk about: painful, heavy periods, super, super light periods, and also pain during intercourse. So pain during intercourse is also well established. But again, your symptoms vary because this is such like a bizarre, you know, situation here. You don't know where that tissue is going and where it's going to attach. And that's going to really affect the kind of symptoms that you have. You know what I mean?
And how do they confirm, because it is sort of inside your body, I guess, how do they sort of confirm that you have endometriosis? Because I suppose your doctor can look at the symptoms and say, it looks like this, but how do you really know for sure?
That's exactly right. So my doctor could look at my chart and she was pretty confident that it was. But ultimately, the only way to diagnose endometriosis is through surgery.
Wow.
Yeah. So that's hard to hear, right? When you're 26 years old and you've been through the ringer and you're like, oh, surgery. Okay. It was a lot. It was a lot to hear and a lot to think about. But ultimately, she kind of painted the picture. Like, this is what I'm thinking is happening. You've already been tested for PCOS. You've already tested negative for all these other things. We don't know what's going on. I think it's this. This was really clear to me through your chart. I think it's endometriosis. The only way to diagnose it is through surgery. Like, this is your next step. And when she laid it out like that, it's like, okay, right? It's, I kind of took it as like, all right. And again, it was such a relief to just have an avenue to go down.
Right.
Like,
right.
Just like to know, okay, what is the next thing we can do instead of just being in the dark, like totally in the dark of not knowing what the hell is wrong with my body, you know? So it was a big relief. So we decided to go through with the surgery. And the way they do it is they try to have the surgery where it's diagnostic. And so they'll go in, check it out, look around,
okay,
and decide if you have it or not. And then also during the same surgery, they'll actually remove all the tissue.
The tissue, okay.
So they try to do it together, like two in one. For me, unfortunately, they went in for the diagnostic procedure and looked around and it was too far gone. There was already too much. The endometriosis was so advanced that they weren't going to be able to take it all out in that one surgery.
Oh, okay.
So they actually, you know, I wake up on the table and I get the news. Yes, it's endometriosis, which was actually a big relief for me, right? Because at this point, I'm already like, I'm going through with it. I'm literally on the table. This better freaking be endometriosis. Like, this better be it, you know? Like, I'm hoping that this is the case. Because at this point, like, I'm pot committed, you know? I'm committed to this. So let's hope that it is. And this isn't another, like, rabbit hole or another dead end.
Right.
So it was a big relief to hear yes. And then the next news was, but we couldn't get it this time. You're going to have to come in for another surgery. You're going to come in again and we'll do another surgery to get it all removed.
Mm.
So that's what we did. And like I said, at that point, I'm committed. I'm like, okay, this is good. This is good news. We know what's going on. We have the next steps. We know how to address it. We know how to fix it.
Yeah.
This is great. And as far as surgery goes, to be honest, this is like a very simple, easy surgery.
Okay.
So it's all completely laparoscopic. They do tiny little incisions. I mean, my friends and family who have seen my scars, like, you can't even see my scars now. It's been a few years.
Okay.
They're tiny. One of them was in my belly button. So you can't see that one at all. Like, they do a really great job of making it, you know, as minimally as invasive as possible.
Okay. I mean, do you sort of stay overnight or do you just kind of walk up and leave right after surgery, or how?
Yeah.
Intense is it?
Yeah, good question. It was pretty long. I want to say the whole thing. I mean, as far as surgery goes, it's very short and simple. But I didn't stay overnight. It was same day, you know, what is it? Inpatient, outpatient? I always get those mixed up. But
yeah, I know
but
what you
same
mean.
Day. Yeah. So I want to say it was like maybe 6 hours total.
Okay.
You know, I needed my husband to like drive me home. I was totally out of it afterwards. But it was really like 2 days, like 48 hours of being like laying down, you know, kind of out of it on pain meds or whatever. And then after that, I could start kind of easing back into activity.
Okay.
So again, as far as surgery goes, not the worst.
Yeah, that's
surgery.
All right. Yeah.
So still, yeah, still super serious. You still need to be very aware, you know, obviously if you have any sensitivities to like anesthesia or pain meds, like you need to have all of that, you know, you need to have all of your I's dotted in that regard. But as far as surgery goes, it was nice. It was really nice to be able to have something to do, to get it taken care of, to know that I'm like, I'm making progress. Like, that's the biggest thing. It was like, I'm making progress. I have answers. I'm not just like staring out in the dark, wondering what's wrong with my body.
And then once the surgery's done, does it just sort of heal up on its own, I guess? I mean, do you have to wait a while before sort of trying again to get pregnant, or did you try again?
Yeah, good question. So the way that they remove the tissue that they do nowadays is very different than they did 30 years ago. So some of like older friends that I have who had endometriosis, having conversations with them is always really interesting because they are like, oh, you've got to get pregnant immediately after surgery. And then you just have to keep getting pregnant because as soon as you stop getting pregnant, it's all going to come back and then you're done, you know? And that's really not the reality anymore. That's very much like kind of a, kind of a myth or something, right? Like that's not how that was true for old kind of surgeries when they cut it out. But now, the more common surgery is it's called a carbon laser. So they laser out the tissue. And
I
with
see.
that, it's much, much less likely to return. Like we're talking like under 10% or
Okay.
something. Like very, very unlikely that the endometriosis will come back, at least in the same place that it's been removed from. Nobody can guarantee that it's not going to pop up some other random place because that's kind of the nature of the game, unfortunately.
Okay.
But it's very unlikely that it'll return once it's cut, once it's removed. Yeah, I don't remember exactly how much time afterwards. Like I said, it took a few days recovery, probably like a week before I could like be up and like vacuuming the house or something. I don't know. I
Yeah.
remember vacuuming was like the nice thing that they say, don't vacuum the house, right? After you have surgery, it's like 2 weeks to vacuum. I'm like, yeah, my husband has to do all the vacuuming, you know? But yeah, so it took a little while. And then, but then we definitely were trying, you know, as soon as we could. And to be honest, like as far as emotional, mental, psychological difficulty with infertility, for me, the time period after my surgery, after we had done this, after we'd gone through everything, and then we still weren't getting pregnant, was probably up there as like the most difficult, right? When we feel like I've done everything, you know, either the part right before the endometriosis, when we just had no idea, that was probably the worst because you're just trying and you know something's wrong and you don't know what it is, and there seems to be no end in sight and no hope. But then afterwards, you do all this, you go through the blood draws and the hormone stuff and the surgeries. And it's just like month after month after month, you're like, oh. You know, that feeling, it's really hard. And it hit me, it affected me way, way more than I thought it would. You know, I feel like I'm generally pretty level-headed and I'm not a big feelings kind of person. And it would just hit me sometimes like a brick to the chest. I'm like, oh, just this overwhelming, almost like despair sometimes of like, why doesn't my body work? Like, why don't I work the way that I'm supposed to? You know, I'm supposed to be able to do this. Why doesn't this work? Was pretty hard, was way harder than I ever would have thought it would be.
Yeah. And did you have sort of like support during that period, or how did you sort of get through it?
I mean, my husband, he's a great support. He's the best. So yeah, I mean, huge, huge support. We were definitely always, you know, always in it together. And I always felt really, really supported by him. There's an aspect to it where he's also kind of grieving. He's also kind
Sure.
of
Yeah.
struggling. He's also, you know, he's having difficulty with it too. It's just not quite the same, right? It's hard to explain. Nobody can really like know what that feels like.
Yeah.
And like for me, again, like I could say, you know, we're fine. We don't need to have kids right now. Like, I'm okay with this. I'm okay with this. And I can like logically understand that that's a reasonable stance to have. And yet I would sometimes see like just another woman pregnant in the store or just like another, like a young family with little kids. And I would like break down. Like, I would just break down and like uncontrollably sob and not even really understand why, you know? So it's something very like deep. There's
Yeah.
something really deep inside me that even though I could say I'm okay with this and we're all right, all of a sudden it would just be really clear, like I'm not okay with this, you know, like somewhere deep down, like, no, this is like a really deep desire for me, a really, really deep desire that I can't just like shut down and pretend doesn't exist.
Yeah, and it's about having the choice to either have kids or not. When you have the choice taken away from you, I can imagine that's quite scary. But the good news is
Yeah.
that you have a happy ending, right? Because you do have a child.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's really kind of what we learned is that we didn't really have a choice, right? Like that idea in my mind when I first got married that like I can just say, "Oh, we're gonna have kids," and boom, 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 we have babies. That's actually not reality. Like
Yeah.
I've learned now that's not reality. Many, 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 most, dare I say most, couples think, you know, like it doesn't just happen when you want it to happen, right? You're not actually in control the way that you think you're in control. And that's really what, like, the biggest lesson we learned, you know?
Yeah.
And so after surgery, we have this period where we're still going month after month after month, 6 months, 9 months, 10 months, a year, and we're still not pregnant. It's like, oh my gosh, this is so hard. At this point, we're just like, you just got to surrender. It's like, we've done our part. We've done everything we can. This is clearly not up to us. This is not in my control. This is not up to, like, our plans are kind of out the door at that point. And it was a lot of surrendering, a lot of like, well, all right, we'll take what comes, you know, we'll take what's come, and we've done everything we can. I'm still doing the dairy free, and I'm exercising, and I'm sleeping, and I'm doing my best, right? I'm trying my best, but I'm no longer going to, like, sit here and, like, have this kind of death grip over when I have a child or not, yeah, in my mind, yeah, because it's just not reality. It's I'm not actually able to control this anymore is kind of the conclusion I came to.
Yeah. And do you think it was kind of that letting go of control that sort of led it to happen in a way?
Yeah, I do. Actually, I think that was a huge, huge part of it. It didn't happen until I really could kind of let go and kind of just be open, like truly open, right? Not like in the beginning when I said I was open and we're kind of, but I like have my own idea in my mind. It's like, okay, but if I get pregnant at this time, I'm going to do this and I'm going to control the whole thing, but actually be like truly open. That was a huge piece. And so at that point after surgery, now I was in a super stressful job, really stressed out all the time. Okay. I was a residence hall director. So within at a university, like on a college campus,
if
you can imagine, like, you know, a dorm, you got like thousands of 18-year-olds who are like on their own for the first time. And there's like drinking and drugs and all that. And then I'm like in charge of all of those kids.
Oh, my goodness. Bless you.
So, yeah. So super stressful. We're talking like middle of the night, police call, 911, things you have to get up and respond to all the time. Like very stressful kind of job. And I was new. This was the first time I had done this kind of job. So it's over the head, like I'm over my head stressed. And it wasn't until, I remember so vividly, it wasn't until I had caught up on my emails, which sounds really silly and mundane, but I had been over my head stressed, never caught up on my emails for almost a year, like with this job. And it was like, I got down to zero in my inbox. And within that week, we conceived. So
wow. So the moral of the story is read your emails, people.
I think the moral of the story is, like, I mean, believe in God or not, you can believe in your body. Your body knows. Mm-hmm. Like there's something about my, like, your body knowing, like, you're super stressed out right now. Like you aren't sleeping right. You are over your head. You're exhausted. This is not a safe time to have a child, right? Like there's something about that, that is just, yeah, that I just believe wholeheartedly now. It's so clear. It was like my body just knew. And then all of a sudden I could breathe, you know, I could take a deep breath. And when I could finally breathe and kind of relax and mentally, psychologically feel like, okay, I'm okay. I'm not under constant threat, right? I'm safe. Mm. I'm safe. It's okay. That's when it happened, you know?
Wow. And now you have a beautiful child. That's a lovely,
yeah.
A lovely story.
Yeah. Yeah. It's been pretty great. So that was a good, let's see. So I had my surgeries January and March of 2018 and conceived my son in February of 2019. So.
Okay.
Just under a year after my surgery, after my last surgery.
Well, congratulations, I guess I can say, even though it's a bit, it's a bit late.
No, thank you. Yeah, it's been great. Love it.
And so your story had a happy ending, and I hope that other women's stories can have one as well. As we wrap up here, is there anything that you would say to women who are maybe having symptoms that are kind of mysterious or can't get pregnant or have been diagnosed with endometriosis?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the biggest thing to me would just get to know your body. I mean, start charting in some way. There are many, many, many different systems. You don't have to use the one that I did. so many options. What I did was Creighton model, but I mean, there's Billings, there's Marquette model, there's FEMM, F-E-M-M is a great model. There are apps on your phone. Like, there are so many options, and I highly recommend, like, just choose one and get to know your body, get to know your cycle, know when you're fertile and when you're not. And then second, that goes with that, is find a doctor who knows that system, right? Find a doctor who knows what you're doing, so that you kind of have a common language, so that you can show up and say, here's my chart, and they can see it and be like, oh, yep, I see what you're saying. I know exactly what you mean. I see exactly what's happening, right? So you don't have to sit here and go back and forth like, well, is this normal? And they're like, well, how heavy are we talking? Well, how light, you know, like, you don't have to like do that, because that's just going to stretch it out. And it's a pain. Find a system that works for you, and find a doctor who knows that system would be like absolutely number one advice. And the system, again, that I use, NAPRO technology, is designed specifically to find like medical issues like endometriosis, okay, like PCOS. So it's important for family planning, but it's also like the one that doctors recommend using if you're looking for underlying medical issues. So that one's been, it's just been such a lifesaver. So you really just need to be your own advocate in these kinds of situations, you know your body, know what's going on, find a doctor that works for you. And if that doctor doesn't work, like I said, I mean, I saw 4 different doctors. If it doesn't work, move on, like find someone else, find someone who does speak your language, find someone else that will work with you, who will listen to you, and who you feel comfortable really sharing and really talking about what's going on, and who you think, you know, you trust and they trust you, and you feel comfortable kind of telling them what's really going on. I think that's the most important.
Yeah, I love that. That's a great note to end on. Be your own advocate and make sure that they understand you, they hear you, and what you think is important. Awesome. Well, Shauna, thanks so much for taking the time to speak to us today. Before we sign off, where can people find you and connect with you online?
Yeah, for sure. I don't have a lot of places, but I'm on Instagram. You can find me at I am Shauna Wicker. So just I-A-M-S-H-A-W-N-A and W-I-C-K-E-R. I am Shauna Wicker on Instagram.
All right. Awesome. Well, Shauna, enjoy the rest of your day in Minnesota, your lovely home. And we'll catch up with you soon.
Thanks, Allie. Thanks so much.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
This episode is brought to you by Emerge and Shine Academy. Put yourself out there, move past the fear of public speaking, and have fun doing it. Our monthly membership is 3 sessions a month and a supportive community of women. Don't dim your light, embrace your shine. Learn more on Instagram at Emerge and Shine or on Facebook, Emerge and Shine. Thanks so much for listening, and we'll see you on the next episode of Say Your Piece.